Going Linux, episode 231, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, listener feedback.
If you want to send us feedback, our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com and our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889.
Okay, Larry, I hear that you got a new toy for Christmas. Tell us what it is.
Yes. Well, I mentioned it on our year-end episode for 2013. Now that we're in 2014, I can say it straight up. I have a Samsung Chromebook ARM-based processor running Chrome OS, and I'm loving it.
Are you loving it, or are you just loving it?
It's great. It's great. I'm still learning how to use it.
Well, I had a Chromebook that died.
Yeah, I was reading that on our Google Plus community. What happened there, Bill?
Apparently, when the Acers are put together, they only use these two really flimsy, brackets to hold the LED or the screen onto the body. And I guess all the wires run through it. So every time you open it, it was flickering and carrying on. And so what I did is I opened it once and it flickered and then went off and would not come back on. So I loaded myself up, carried it down, back down to where I got it. And a nice shout out to Walmart. They were very nice about replacing it. But I didn't go back with a Chromebook. I was pretty much PO'd with it. So I got a Windows 8 tablet instead.
What?
To hope.
What? Bill.
Hold on. Let me finish.
This is a Linux podcast. This isn't Nightwise's show.
I know, but let me finish.
All right.
So I got this Windows 8 tablet and decided that I would try to put dual boot Linux on it.
Okay.
And since it's a full version of Windows, it's not an RT, it looks like it will work. But okay, the funniest thing about it is when you start it up at the bottom right-hand screen, it says secure boot not enabled.
Wonderful. Okay, well, that's good. At least you don't have to go through that step before installing a Linux on it.
So I was like, really? It's you 8.1 Windows, and you guys can't even secure the bootloader. Way to go, guys. Thank you, I might add, but yeah, it's all good.
Okay.
So, yes, I drunk the Kool-Aid for a little bit, but hopefully with a little research, I can get some Linux booting on it as a dual boot. And it's kind of handy to actually have a Windows and a Linux laptop that you can switch between. So we'll see.
I'm thinking it's going to be just as cool to have a Linux laptop and a Chromebook to switch between. And we've got a lot of stuff we can talk about on upcoming episodes, that's for sure.
Well, you know what? You're just a fanboy.
Ah, come on. I'm a Linux fanboy.
All right. What do we got going on?
All right. Well, let's see. We have a voicemail from Robert, and we have a bunch of emails, and then we close the show. So that's it's pretty straightforward today, just a standard everyday listener feedback episode. So shall we get started?
Yeah, let's listen to what Robert has to say.
Okay.
Hi, Bill and company. I've been, I guess, having fun. I installed a new distro called Elementary Luna OS and been having fun tweaking it. But I incurred a little problem lately with my wireless connection. I'm not sure what is the problem. I downloaded the Wi-Fi radar to hopefully detect Wi-Fi. And it did detect the Wi-Fi once I downloaded and installed that. But yet I was still not able to connect to the, well, actually in the library to connect. So I'm not sure what the problem is and why it is not detecting it on its own. It was doing it before. Of course, this is a different distro. So if you have any thoughts, you know how to get in contact with me. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that, Robert. Good luck with Luna. I really like Elementary OS, and I think you'll enjoy it. As far as Wi-Fi issues are concerned, I did a little research into Wi-Fi radar, hadn't used it myself, and all that really does is let you set up some profiles for your Wi-Fi connection and to detect Wi-Fi connections and things like that, that quite frankly, I think you might have been able to do with the Wi-Fi application that is already on the computer, but the thing I think that Wi-Fi radar lets you do that you can't do with the standard network software is the profiles, setting up the profiles, and that can be handy, I'm sure. But that's not really going to solve your issues, I don't think, and it doesn't really help us diagnose what the issue is, and you didn't give us much detail, so I think, Bill, what would you suggest here?
Okay, Robert, this is what I'm going to do for you. Contact me on Google Plus, and here's some of the information I'm going to need to see if I can't help you figure out what's going on. What model PC do you have? Possibly if you can find out what kind of Wi-Fi card. And then is your elementary OS completely updated? And other than that, we'll probably just have to go back and forth a little bit, get some different specs. The more specs you can give me, the better. And we'll see if we can't nail this down and get it to work. But like I said, just go ahead and send me a message on Google Plus, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, great. Thanks for that, Bill. That's a nice gesture on your part. Personal service. Look at that.
Give me that information, and we'll see if we can't help you.
Great. Okay, our first email is from John, who wants to know about burning an ISO. He writes, "Hi, Larry and crew." I guess that would be you, Bill. I downloaded a Mint new version, wanted to try it since I'm on version 14. Since I'm running all my Linux in VirtualBox, it works great. But now I can't do anything with the download, won't see my CD-ROM drive, can't burn an ISO or put it on an external drive. The download was in Mint, which is in VirtualBox. Is that the reason? I've usually done the ISOs in Windows. Is there something I need in Mint to enable it to burn an ISO, or is it VirtualBox? Well, John, I think that it's VirtualBox and or your computer. So in VirtualBox, you need to make sure that you've got the pass-through enabled for your CD drive.
And you also need to check to make sure that you have the CD checked so it's visible to the virtual.
Yes. So there's some settings in VirtualBox.
Yes.
And what I meant when I said that it might be your computer, since you describe it as a CD-ROM drive, the Linux Mint ISOs are DVDs, not CDs. So depending on the age of your computer, if it's of sufficient age that it only has a CD burner and not a DVD burner, that might be your problem as well. You actually need a DVD to hold the entire distribution of Linux Mint. Another option for you would be to use a USB stick, and you have to go through that pass-through thing as well. Make sure that you have, what's the thing called, Bill, where Is it the extensions or for VirtualBox? There's some additional software.
Extras. Extra extensions or something to that effect.
Yeah. So there's some extra things that you have to install along with the VirtualBox. They're available in the repositories if that's where you installed VirtualBox from. And I think they're actually installed by default these days. That enables USB and USB pass-through. And once you have that enabled, then you should be able to, with a 1 gigabyte or 2 gigabyte, if you can find one that small these days, USB thumb drive, you should be able to put the ISO on there and use that to do your installations going forward. So good luck with that.
I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
Okay. Why can't he just do an in-place upgrade inside VirtualBox?
Well, he didn't give us a lot of details as to what he wants to do with that. Yeah, so if all you want to do is upgrade, you could do the in-place upgrade. But if all you want to do is create an ISO that you can install the latest Linux Mint on your VirtualBox installation, you should be able to just use the ISO and point the virtual CD-ROM drive or DVD drive to that ISO and have it use it as though it were a CD or DVD. You don't even have to burn it.
It doesn't care if it's a DVD if you're going to point it right at the VirtualBox.
Right, exactly. So you just take your VirtualBox settings. You go to the hardware devices and configure the CD-ROM to open a file and point it at the ISO file, and it will treat it as though it were a CD or a DVD right from there. And you should be able to do your installation from that. Hit F12 as you boot into VirtualBox to start the live DVD, and you can do a fresh install right from that.
Yeah, that sounds like the easiest way to do it.
I think so, yeah.
Our next email comes from Andrew, who was asking about connecting his phone. He writes, "Hi there, Larry. I want to connect my Samsung SGH-I727 to my Linux computer so I can move things from my phone to my computer and from my computer to my phone and do updates to the phone. And I can't find anything about how to do so online. Can you help, Andrew?"
Yeah. Well, I actually have this model of phone myself, and you should be able to just take the charger cord, which is a USB cable, plug it into your computer, and that can be Linux or Windows or Mac. And it will not only charge it, but it should open up a file manager and you should be able to move files back and forth. Now, what I have noticed is that that connection won't give you access to everything. It'll give you access, I think it's to the SD card that's on board on that phone, but some of the other files it won't give you access to. So you're not going to be able to do tethered upgrades to your phone. But my phone is from AT&T, and they provide all of the updates to the phone's firmware and software over the air, so I don't need to tether it to my computer to do that. And in fact, with my phone and my Linux computer, I don't even use the cable to pass files back and forth. There are a couple of ways I pass files to my phone. The most common of which is I use Dropbox. I've gone to the Android Play Store and installed the Dropbox application from there so that I have Dropbox on my phone. And I also have Dropbox on my computer, and I'll pass the files back and forth from there. And for photos, I actually use Ubuntu One. And in the Ubuntu One settings for the phone, yes, there's an Ubuntu One for Android, you can set it up so that when you take a picture with your phone, it automatically uploads it to an Ubuntu One folder, and then a few minutes after you take the picture, it's available on your computer for editing or sending out it by email or whatever you want to do with it. Post it to Instagram. I don't know what you want to do with your phones, but that's how I use it. I use it in one of those two ways, either Dropbox or Ubuntu One. And you could do the similar sorts of things with either one. You don't have to use both. But I use both just to keep the two things separate. For files, I just want to move back and forth. I use Dropbox. And for the photos, I use Ubuntu One. And just using those two services keeps those two different functions separate.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
I haven't had the opportunity to hook my new Droid up to it, so because it does everything I want. So I just plug it in and keep on going. So. Yeah.
Well, and for podcasts, actually, I have a an old computer running Linux Mint Mate 13. And its primary function is to act as a clock and to download podcasts. And so I've got G-Potter running on that. It downloads the podcasts. And I've used a tip that Nightwise provided to synchronize wirelessly over my wireless network. The files are on that little server, essentially, with my phone, and take all the audio podcasts and put them right on my phone via the wireless syncing capabilities of the phone. And the application on the phone that I use for that is something called BotSync. And if you go to the BotSync website, which we'll have in our show notes, you can find the instructions there on how to get this thing set up.
All right.
Our next email is from Hunter. Hunter writes, "Hey, Going Linux podcast. I'm a blind Linux enthusiast, and I've been doing some tinkering around with Fedora and Arch in VirtualBox. I'm going to see if there is a Wubi installer for those two distros, but I need to know two very critical bits of information. Number one, the accessibility. Here's an example. In Fedora, when the virtual machine boots from the disk, I can press Enter to skip the boot prompt. Then I can press Alt-F2 and type Orca to activate the screen reader. Then once I've installed the distro, the screen reader will stay active. How can I do this from a Wubi environment? Another crucial bit is the selection of the boot menu. How do I, one, access the menu, and two, select the appropriate operating system? I'm assuming this is all in BIOS, which is not blind friendly at the present time. Yours, Hunter."
A little later, Hunter emailed us again. He said, "Shame, I can't find a Wubi for Fedora or Arch. Looks like it's an Ubuntu-only deal. In that case, I need to look into whether or not the program comes with GNOME, because that's the only desktop, to my knowledge, that has good accessibility. I think I can help you out there. Jonathan Nadu." What is his, it's called Sonar, isn't it?
Yep, Sonar Project. That's perfect.
You need to go do a search, Hunter, for Sonar Project. Jonathan Nadu is a blind computer user who is working on a distribution that has a screen reader that's more accessible, that works all the time, and it's basically for blind people at the moment, but he's working on other disabilities. So we'll put a note in the show notes so that you can look it up. You also can type it into Google, and that would probably be your best bet.
Yeah, and that is absolutely true. If Hunter is interested in just having a system that works, if you're interested in pursuing, you know, exploring Linux and finding out a little bit more about how it works and that sort of stuff, one of the things you could do is, as you've discovered, of course, Wubi is for Ubuntu only. And as a note, it's no longer provided by Ubuntu. Recent versions using Unity don't support it. The good news is that if you stick with Ubuntu rather than Kubuntu, GNOME is the default. And as you've noticed, that's the desktop environment that has the most accessibility. So when you start Wubi from within Windows, which is what you have to do in order to use the Wubi install, after inserting a regular Ubuntu Live DVD, a dialog box should appear on the screen offering the option to try or to install Ubuntu. Once you've clicked on the installation button and you've actually done the installation, the computer can be rebooted and the menu that appears is the Windows bootloader, not the BIOS or the Grub bootloader. I would not expect that the Windows bootloader would be accessible, though. While the boot options are on the screen, I think you should be able to just press the down arrow to select the second operating system. That would be Ubuntu. Then press Enter to boot into Ubuntu. It should work just like regular Ubuntu at that point. Hope that helps, and thanks for listening.
Hunter's response was, "Well, I am now a proud Ubuntu user. Thanks very much for the help. Everything is working magically. I'm glad to hear that."
Okay, our next email is from David, who wrote, "Hi, Larry. Hi, Bill.
Hi, David."
Yeah, hi, David. He also writes, "Hi, Tom, either in spirit or through the podiosphere, if this letter is being read. And Bill, just know that the answer to life, the universe, and everything is 42, not 73.
You but guys, it's 73 when you're a ham.
Okay. You guys may wish to discuss the issue I raise in this letter in the forthcoming advanced episode on dual booting." Well, we've already done that one, David, so I think maybe we've covered this, but let's read your email anyway. Especially questions 2 and 4 below. Oh, this is a long email, Bill. We're going to split this one in two. I'll read the first part, you read the second part. Continuing with David's email, just to confirm that I'm about to do the right thing and some questions about upgrading my live distro version, in this case Linux Mint 15 to 16. I have my distro in one partition and my home in another. I plan to simply install from a live CD, Linux Mint 16, where Linux Mint 15 now exists, linking to the existing home partition. And yes, I will back up my home drive first to be safe. My backup USB drive may not be big enough, so I may end up only backing up my critical data. As per the non-personal data, I assume it's all critical. Please confirm. Well, as far as the first part of your email is concerned, it sounds like we covered most of this in the advanced episode, so that's good news. As far as non-personal data, it is all critical, but it's all part of the operating system. So when you do your reinstallation, it's going to overwrite stuff anyway. So I think you're good.
Okay, the second part of this was, number one, I understand that by using the same home drive, my existing software settings will be preserved. And then he goes on and quotes 1A, so apparently these have multiple parts. sneaky. For example, will my Firefox settings and add-ons be there for me in Linux Mint 16? And I would have to say, yes, they should be.
Yeah, they will be.
1B says, what about software I manually added over the past months? Will I have to reinstall them, or will this happen automatically? If this must be reinstalled, will they link to the existing settings?
Well, the answer to that one is yes and yes. you do have to reinstall any software that you've installed manually. And because the settings are stored in your home folder, and since you've got a separate partition for your home folder, as long as you tell your new installation that your home drive is on a separate partition, the settings will be preserved, and as soon as you do your installation, everything will be back the way it was before.
Number 2, can I instead install Linux Mint 16 on a new partition, leaving Linux Mint 15 in place, but still using the same home directory? Would this dual boot system be reliable? And I'll have to say I've heard it being done before, so yes.
Yeah, the only thing you need to worry about is the two systems getting out of sync in terms of version numbers for the software applications. So Linux Mint 15 may lag a little bit behind, and Linux Mint 16 will have a more recent version and get more frequent updates. In most cases, in the vast majority of cases, this won't be a problem because the applications themselves still use the same drivers, still use the same settings, and everything should work just fine. It's only when there are major feature changes to an application that this might cause a problem. So that's the only thing to worry about. And if you do start having problems with a specific application, that's what I would look at first, see if there are any new features that have been added that might have changed the way the preferences are stored or something like that.
And don't forget that if you get stuck, stop by the Google Plus page and ask, because sometimes there's guys there that know the answer right away.
Yep, you got it.
Okay, number three. Similarly, can I add a different but still Ubuntu Debian-based distro in another partition, such as PNGi, also using the same home drive? Is this smart or too risky considering that this is my main machine, which is used for many purposes, including critical business-related ones? And I'm going to say it can be done, but don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're looking at two different distributions, now the chances of the settings being different are increased. And as a result, there's more of a risk that things could break, especially when you boot into PNGi and you make some adjustments and then you go back to Ubuntu and now those adjustments need to be readjusted. It gets really messy very quickly. And since this is your main machine and you use it for business, I agree with Bill. Don't do it, David.
Don't. Just don't do it.
There you go.
Just to give him an idea of how this would what would happen is I actually have a PNGi partition on my main drive, and I have Ubuntu, and I was playing with sharing the home directories, or the home directory for both of them. And the problem with that is that PNGi saves a lot of data that will overwrite stuff for the regular Ubuntu. So sometimes you get some really weird looking stuff. So don't do it.
Right.
Okay. And number four, he says, same as number three, but can I try also with a non-Ubuntu Debian-based distro, such as Fedora? Or would I be entertaining the distro hopping world of Bill?
Yes. Yes, you would.
Yes. Or even the mid-flight playing with nuts and bolts of Tom.
Yes. Yes, yes you would.
You would. Sorry, guys. I would rather be like Larry. Oh, okay. Okay. Good, solid, and reliable. Oh, okay. I see what's how this one's going. Having lived in Ontario, like Rob Ford and myself, thanks for the help. Larry?
Uh-huh.
This guy's dead to me. You answering.
Man, well, thanks for the entertaining email, David, and hopefully we've answered your questions. Our last email is from Mel. He asked a question. Hey, I've recently started listening to your podcast. I'm on number 17 and wanted to know your thoughts on putting a Linux version on a smartphone. I found this app on the Droid called Linux Deploy, which I'm really interested in trying. And installing Arch alongside the Android OS. I'm going to try to install it sometime this week when I have time, but thought you might like to look into this. I've read over your lists of episodes and saw you haven't had anything on smartphones, unless I missed it. To install on your phone, though, will you have to root your phone? Any thoughts or tips on that as well? Mel. So, I did a little looking into Linux Deploy. I hadn't heard of it before. And yes, you do have to root your phone, which is one of the reasons why I haven't used it and haven't tried it, is because
you're the solid one.
Yes, that's right. I'm not going to root my phone just to try something like this out. Now, I might root my tablet to try it out, but that's another story. Okay, so anyway.
Doubt it.
Linux Deploy does allow you to do a dual boot with various Linux distributions, but like I said, I haven't really tried it out, and if you do try it and you do get it working, we'd be interested in what you find, Mel.
Yeah, and good luck with Arch. Whew.
Yeah, that's a bit of a challenge. You might, you know, unless you're really a Linux aficionado, you might want to try something a little easier to start with. But then again, you know, Arch is a good way to learn.
And actually, what Larry's trying to tell you is if you're smarter than Bill, it's okay. Go ahead and give it a whirl. Because he's a solid one.
Okay. All right.
Not bitter. Not bitter at all.
Okay.
Just kidding, guys. It's all in good fun.
Yes, absolutely. So, Bill, that's it for our emails for this time around. So I have an application pick that I've stumbled across in the past week. So I've been working on our screencast episode on dual booting. Mm-hmm. And I have found that in Linux Mint 16, GTK Record My Desktop no longer works properly.
What?
I mean, it functions properly, but when you get the recording done, there are a lot of delays and tears, and it's just not processing the video correctly. And I've tried this on the native machine, and I've tried this on another machine using Peppermint 4 and found the same thing. So I'm thinking that it has to do with the latest version of Ubuntu rather than Mint or Peppermint. And maybe it has to do with Cinnamon, but on Peppermint 4, I wasn't using Cinnamon either, so that's probably not the issue. So I have abandoned GTK Record My Desktop in favor of, drumroll please, Kazam. Kazam is a desktop recording software. Mm-hmm. It's been around for a while. It's specifically designed for screencasts, as you'll notice in the menus and so on, and it allows you a little more control than in GTK Record My Desktop. Of course, it's graphical as well, and it does a really good job. It's designed for high definition, which may be what the issue is here, but I wouldn't think so because I'm using it on the same machine that I was using GTK Record My Desktop before, so I'm not sure what was going on there. But I've uninstalled GTK Record My Desktop, and I'm starting the screencast over again with Kazam, and it seems to be going really well in my test shots, so we'll be using that from now on.
Well,
and we'll have a link to Kazam in the show notes.
Well, I was also going to let you know that I'm running PC Linux OS as my main, and they also have one that I haven't heard of. I'll give it a whirl and see if it works any better, just to kind of compare it.
Okay.
I'll let you know if it's comparable, and then we'll see if we can't find it on in Mint or Ubuntu or PPA or something.
Right. Okay. No, that sounds
all
great.
Right.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Do you have an application pick, or was that it?
Well, my application is actually an operating system. Is PC Linux OS. Yes, I've already picked it like three times, but I've fallen completely in love with it. And there's some interesting stuff that they're doing with it, and more to come later.
And I guess that's it for our episode, Bill. Our next episode will be Computer America number 69. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.